Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria says all adults 18 and older must be vaccinated by December 31st.
All federal government employees are therefore reminded that December 1st, 2021 remains the deadline for all to show evidence of being vaccinated fully.
Kenya mandates COVID vaccination to access government services. More protests are expected in Sudan, despite reinstatement of the prime minister. Investigators say Somalia's intelligence agency is not responsible for the disappearance of a female spy. And Eswatini teachers are reluctantly returning to the classroom today, but student leaders say they will not.
We cannot oppose the opening of schools because we understand that the government now is pushing us to a position whereby we are going to oppose the opening of schools so that they will effect the no pay.
And the 10th annual Dakar Parkour Art event kicks off this week. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria, only 6 million out of 200 million citizens are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. The government says everyone above 18 years of age should be inoculated against the virus, though all public and civil service workers must receive a shot by December 1st as fatalities continue to grow. From Abuja, reporter Munachi Chalks has more.
Authorities have vowed to bar government employees from their offices if they are not able to show proof of vaccination against the virus. Bas Mustafa is the chairman of the Presidential Steering Committee on COVID-19 and secretary to the government of the Federation. He confirmed the policy on mandatory vaccinations while inaugurating the mass vaccination campaign against the pandemic over the weekend. Mustafa says the campaign is one of the government's strategic approaches to quickly increase the number of fully vaccinated citizens in Nigeria.
All federal government employees are therefore reminded that December 1st, 2021 remains the deadline for all to show evidence of being vaccinated fully or a PCR negative test result done 72 hours before being allowed into government facilities, particularly their offices.
Under the effort, up to 1 million doses of the vaccine will be administered per day and up to about 55 million people treated by the time the initiative ends. In addition, the Nigerian Center for Disease Control, or NCDC, is helping states to implement preparedness and response activities against COVID-19. It is calling on all Nigerians to join forces and take greater responsibility for controlling the spread of the virus in a campaign called Take Responsibility. Dr. Faisal Shuaibu is the executive director of the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency. He says the organization is concerned about Nigerians who have refused to be inoculated against the virus.
It is important to add that today, none of the 6 million Nigerians that have received their vaccine have died as a result of the COVID-19 vaccination. What the data released by the NCDC shows is that over 80% of people who have died from COVID-19 are those who are unvaccinated.
Schreiber notes that the government aims to create additional vaccination sites in several venues, including hospitals, university health centers and clinics, pharmacies, mosques, churches, corporate offices and private health facilities. The Minister of Health, Dr. Sagie Ehanire, is also encouraging Nigerians to receive the shot.
I remind all persons that by taking COVID-19 vaccine, that would be one of the proven ways to avert mass catastrophe that unfortunately has befallen some countries.
The Presidential Steering Committee on COVID-19 in Nigeria says the campaign aims to have at least half of all citizens over the age of 18 inoculated by the 31st of January 2022. For VOA News, Munachi Chuks in Abuja.
K Kenya's Ministry of Health has announced that anyone not vaccinated against COVID-19 by December 21st will be refused in-person government services and access to public gatherings, parks, hotels, restaurants, and bars. Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
Kenyans have less than 1 month to get the COVID-19 vaccine or risk losing the right to access in-person government services. Minister for Health Mutahi Kagwe Sunday announced new measures aimed at nudging vaccine-shy citizens towards getting the jab before the end of the year.
We must take cue from the rest of the world and learn from them. A worrisome epidemiological picture is emerging in the European countries, in the Netherlands, Austria, France, Belgium, United Kingdom, Australia, and the United States of America, where new COVID-19 cases have surged. And that is despite quite a bit of drive in vaccinations.
The Kenyan government says the move is aimed at ensuring that the country meets its target of vaccinating at least 10 million people by the end of the year. Currently, there are about 6.5 million doses of the vaccine that have been administered since the vaccination kicked off, with only 2.4 million people fully vaccinated, or less than 10% of Kenya's adult population.
We are given sufficient time for people to go through this exercise so that post-21st, people then don't start accusing police of harassing them.
The announcement of the new measures yet to be implemented come as the country gears towards a peak in holiday-related travel and public gatherings, sparking fears of a resurgence in the spread of the virus that has been on a downward trend in recent months. The measures will also limit non-vaccinated people from visiting entertainment spots, hotels and restaurants, as well as hospitals. The unvaccinated will also be limited in the access of public transport systems, including air and rail transport. A 10-day COVID-19 vaccination drive to help get as many people on board as possible begins this Tuesday across Kenya. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
Sudan's Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok has been reinstated in the deal with the military following weeks of unrest sparked by a coup. Despite the military promising to release all political prisoners, protesters have vowed to continue demonstrating for democracy. Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok got his power back to continue with the country's political transition. He had been kept under house arrest since October 25th, when the military overthrew his government and arrested some politicians. Sulaima Al-Khalifa is a human rights activist in Sudan. She says the current deal did not change the situation on the ground.
We actually did not expect it. It was a surprise, by the way, and a shock. And we feel there is a lot of pressure is happening. Hamdok is under pressure because it's not even logic. What he has done is not even logical according to the series of the event has happened. And because the violations of the people's lives is still going, and since the 25th, we don't have a state actually.
On Sunday, a teenager was shot dead during a protest in the city of Umdurman, according to a pro-democracy Sudanese doctors group. The Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors says 41 people have died so far since the coup. Jonas Horner, a senior analyst on Sudan affairs at the International Crisis Group, says the Prime Minister will hold less power after Sudan's political deal in Khartoum.
Hamdok appears to have been returned to power under some duress. You know, he has made something of a calculation that he would rather be inside a process that now appears to be solidly controlled by the military, by the coup makers from October 25th, rather than being outside. The military had relied on bringing Hamdok back in. That had been their key strategic approach. But Hamdok does bring to the military's government a level of credibility.
Some people in Sudan see Hamdok as a political hero for standing up to the military before and after the coup. Horner predicts that sentiment will change drastically in the streets and Hamdok will find himself in a difficult political position.
He will find himself far less popular with the street. And I think he will find himself very low on the sort of power that he will need really to turn this back around in the direction of the sort of constituencies on the street that he really should be pushing for. The relationship between the military and the street will only get worse. The military has shown its cards. It is clearly not seeking to deliver on the sort of transition that people had called for during Sudan's revolution in 2018 and 2019.
In December 2018, Sudanese took to the streets demanding good governance and respect for the rule of law. The street protests eventually drove former President Omar al-Bashir out of power after 30 years in office. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 23rd. Investigators in Somalia have concluded that the country's National Intelligence and Security Agency was not responsible for the presumed death of one of its officers. The committee said there was no evidence the agency was involved in the June disappearance of 24-year-old Ikram Tahlil Farah. Tahlil's parents have rejected the committee's findings and blamed the spy agency, which blames the death on the al-Shabaab terrorist group. Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
General Abdullahi Bulle Kame, the chief prosecutor of the armed forces, court said his team's investigation found no sign that Somalia's chief intelligence agency was responsible for disappearance and presumed death of the officer. He said the investigators' task have found no evidence whatsoever to link the National Intelligence and Security Agency NISA officials to the missing female spy Ikram Tahlil Farah. He also asked that anyone with information in the case present it to the authorities. The mother of the missing cybersecurity intelligence official, Ali Mohamed Guhad, dismissed the committee's findings. She said that they were very astonished with the verdict and her family was not expecting such a result. They do not accept the outcome at all, she added. Smail Dyer is a security analyst and former deputy director of Somalia's spy agency. He alleges that NISA officials, including its acting director, holds sway over the lower house of parliament. He said acquitting the suspects without submitting the process to the court is unlawful and will damage the credibility of the ongoing electoral process, adding that the family of slain spy might resort to seeking alternative means to take justice into their own hands. Farah was an officer for NISA's cybersecurity unit. She was last seen June 26th near the agency's headquarters in Mogadishu. To date, no one has found her body, but the NISA declared her dead in September. In an earlier report, the spy agency blamed the death of their officer on the militant group Al-Shabaab, but the group has strongly denied any involvement. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Schools in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, are expected to reopen today, Tuesday. They had been closed since August this year due to political unrest as students joined politicians to demand a say in the election of their leaders. The students also burned down school buildings in protest. Minister of Education and Training, Lady Hawa Mambusa, says the reopening will take place in phases, starting with grade 7 and form 3 and 5. Lady Mambusa did not make herself available for an interview. Mbongwa Dlamini, president of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers, also known as SNAT, says the teachers are forced to return to the classroom because if they do not, the government will withhold their salaries.
What we should understand here in Swaziland is that as the SNAT, we are having a serious problem because last Thursday, we were supposed to meet the Minister of Education to discuss the logistics behind the opening of schools. Now, after we discovered that there was nothing that the Minister of Education has prepared in as far as meeting the demands, we only learned from the social media that the ministry has ordered that schools are going to open on the 23rd. So without those demands being met, demands including the hiring of teachers, paying of orphaned and vulnerable children's fund, paying of free primary education, and also hiring of teachers. There were no teachers who were hired. So some of the demands the student had was the insufficient of teachers in schools, lack of teaching material, and other things, including now the release of the incarcerated MPs and the return of those in exile.
Based on what you just said, it seems that there are unresolved issues, particularly the students. Are you sure now that the students will come back to school?
I might not be sure if the students will come back to school, but even if they do, the students will come back to school and so the riots are going to start again because none of their demands have been met.
So, Mr. Dlamini, if I hear you clearly, the teachers are on board for reopening of schools, but reluctantly. Is that correct?
Yes, the position of the SNAT is that we cannot oppose the opening of schools because we understand this government, that the government now is pushing us to a position whereby we are going to oppose the opening of schools and so that they will effect the no pay. So to avoid the no pay, we do not have a problem. We are going to attend schools and we know definitely that the students are not happy. And in fact, the last meeting we had with the Minister of Education, we warned them against having a stakeholders meeting without representatives of the students, without representatives of the parents. Now, in our situation, what we gathered is that parents were meeting from the different schools and they were opposed to the opening of schools.
Mr. Dlamini, thank you so much. It is always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
And thanks so much.
Umbongwa Dlamini is the president of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the Swaziland Association of Teachers says while the students want to be educated for a brighter future, they will not return to school today until the Eswatini government satisfies their demands. Ayanda Dlamini is the Secretary General of the Swaziland Association of Students.
Honestly speaking, we want a bright future. We want to be educated. At the same time, we want democracy, freedom of speech. We want somebody who can listen to us, somebody who can care about our future. The government that we have, they really, really don't care about us.
Will the students show up on Tuesday? Will they go to school?
We're not going to school until our MPs are released, until our government is ungovernable. We don't need this Impingundla system. We're sick and tired of them. Our parents and 25 Emalilangis as their salary, for instance. Even us, we're expected to end that 25 Emalilangis because of one person, one family who have a God intervene in Eswatini.
The government says that you are hurting your own education if you do not go to school.
The government doesn't want to listen to students. We don't know why. Are we not also human beings? Even us, we have to be heard. We are the ones who go to school. We are the ones who face challenges. The Minister of Education does not have a school kid, a school-going kid. That's why he doesn't care about students. He doesn't care about our future. My question is, how can he open something that she didn't close? Schools were closed by Prime Minister, not her. So how can she come and say the schools are open now? Have they met our demands?
What are those demands?
Our demands. One, we want free and quality, not quantity, quality education. We want education that will take us far, education that we can be proud of, education that can take us countries, yes. I can't even explain the pain that we are facing as students. In schools, there's poor infrastructure. We drink dirty waters, mostly in the rural areas. They don't care about those schools. They only care about the schools which are around town. We drink dirty water. They usually give us expired food at school.
The Minister of Education said before, I think it was last month or this month, that in order for students to return to school, they must sign a consent form. Are you aware of that?
Yes, we are aware of those forms. We can't sign those forms.
The government is concerned that because there has been violence in schools, and so the government wants to make sure that when the students come back, they have to promise that they are going to stay away from getting involved in violence.
We were not violent. We tried to speak. They didn't listen to us. We tried to cry. They beat us. They killed some of us. What were we supposed to do?
That was Ayanda Dlamini, Secretary General of the Swaziland Association of Students. She was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. The 10th annual Dakar Parkour's art event kicks off this week. After a decade in existence, exhibition curator and photographer Antoine Tempe talks to Ricky Stryag about what's changed with one of the West African city's premier art festivals.
It was really started as not really informal, but more of a friendly gathering initiated by two important cultural spaces for Dakar. That was a raw material company and Espace Céramique. You know, just a few spaces, 16 spaces. And over the years, it has become quite big with many people wanting to be part of it, many spaces, cultural spaces wanting to be part of it. And now for the 10-year anniversary, we're going to be 34 venues.
And what role does parkour uniquely play in Dakar's art scene?
Yeah, the founders wanted to play the role a little bit of a cultural activists, very attached to the city. That's one of the reasons why the events of the annual parkour are spread out into different areas of the city, different neighborhoods. Each night, there's two or three openings in one different neighborhood. And it's very centered around the local communities. So there's five neighborhoods within the city and also a few in the, a larger area outside in the suburbs.
Ed, you mentioned the activism that is behind the founding. Are there issues or themes that are being highlighted this year?
To get the whole artists and cultural spaces community together, show the diversity of the city, try to make things happen inside institutions, outside, also in the city, in city parks, in private homes, on the streets. It's a very, very open vision of art.
How does art integrate into Dakar's not just cultural scene, but political, economic scene as well?
Yeah, I mean, the economic impact of art on the city is significant. We have the Dakar Biennial, which is, of course, happening every other year, which is drawing lots of people from all over the world, curators from galleries. And that was also one of the reasons why Parkour was founded, to also have another event that would be more regular, because it's annual, just to occupy the space outside of that biennial, which is the major event for Dakar.
That was Antoine Tempe, photographer and exhibition curator for Dakar's annual parkours. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Dakar. Before we leave you this morning, we here at the Voice of America English to African Service are remembering Pandere Umbai, originally of The Gambia, who passed away yesterday, Monday. He was a regular contributor to our radio programs, including Daybreak Africa. Pandere was a trailblazing Gambian journalist. He will truly be missed. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great day.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa as we discuss the return of Africa's stolen art. France repatriated 26 looted colonial-era artifacts to Benin. Now museums in Europe and the US are rethinking what to do with their African art collections. We'll discuss art restitution and reparations. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.